Can you see my phone back there?
Your phone? No, it's on the ground. I can't see any ground.
No ground.
No ground.
No ground at all.
No one can see any ground.
You don't even know if we're on the ground, so...
Or you could just be turtles floating in space right now.
Turtle, turtle, turtle. Am I not turtle enough for the turtle? Turtle Club.
I knew you loved that.
Is this how? I think I look normal. In the last one, I felt like I might have been too far back. Did I feel too far back?
This past episode that like just went live for patrons today.
Yeah.
I think we were both not sized up correctly. I didn't like how either of us looked in that.
How do you feel about this one? Is this better?
I think yes. You look way better this time. I think I look better too. I probably have just like a little too much headroom even, but
should I punch in live or post?
That's great. That's great. I wouldn't touch that.
I don't want you to get in the editing room and go, oh no, the shorts all fucked up, you know?
I'll fuck up the shorts some other way, I bet.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 with the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about a list of cards that Cam has pre-found and determined. I do not know what they are. We're going to talk about all of them and the implications in CEDH, maybe some updated opinions.
Yeah, these are all cards that we've talked about on the podcast before, but some of them are old, some of them are new, and a lot of these cards I've seen in deck lists personally or online that I just thought were kind of interesting, and I wanted to see if we have any updated thoughts about what we think about them in 2026.
Got it. Some recent additions to tournament winning decks, maybe.
This is like top seven cards on my mind right now.
I love it. Let's talk about it. This is my favorite.
Me too. All right. So the first one has actually been on my mind for quite a while because I wanted to check in on Cabbage Merchant.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like I started off pretty mid on Cabbage Merchant and then I got really high on Cabbage Merchant.
Yeah.
But now it's back to being mid and I feel like it's this roller coaster of emotions and I can't pinpoint what I think about this card.
Yeah, dude, I'm kind of in a similar boat. I feel like I have heard stories of it making a metric ton of foods. I have also been in situations where it kind of doesn't make any foods or it makes like four or six foods and then you die. But I don't know. So I'm kind of in the same boat as you.
Because something I've noticed about a lot of the stories about where I hear that it makes like 30 food is the story stops after how much food you make.
Yeah.
The story doesn't continue like, and then I won the game. Right. Yeah. Like it could be, oh, I made 30 food, but like I didn't have anything to do with the mana. So it really actually wasn't very helpful.
I do think it's especially good in Thrasios decks in Sisse decks. I think there it makes the most sense. And even there, when I played it in Sisse, it's been only okay for me, which I know feels kind of crazy. And I think that's just small sample size. I've only seen it in play twice. Sometimes it makes just like three treasures and then there's a creature deck at the table or it gets removed. And I mean, that's to be said for most things. I still think it has the potential to be very good. But for me personally, I haven't felt it really be insane and win me the game just yet.
Even with the downside of this card where you have to sacrifice a food if you're dealt combat damage, that I feel like has also not really come off. And I feel like that has not helped this card be better than either.
Right, yeah. I think oftentimes if you're playing Cabbage Merchant, you're already in green, so there's a good chance you have like reasonable blockers and you're just like willing to block to protect your foods a lot of times. In Sisse, if Sisse's out, Sisse's normally kind of big. You
like,
know what I mean?
Yeah, what are you getting attacked by? Like a lot of two-power creatures a lot of the time. Your Thrasios alone blocks a lot of things.
Right. So I do agree, though, that is another weakness of the card is it incentivizes everyone to try to attack you for some reason. So if you're in like black-green and you're like already doing ad nauseum Necropotence, they're never not attacking you if you have a Cabbage Merchant.
No, so it kind of makes this only be like a mid-range card.
Yeah, so I don't know. I still think it's quite powerful. I want to see more from the card. I'm not saying that it's bad. Just for me, I haven't seen it be super great right now, but it does read like it has the potential, and I think it's certainly a card that if you combine it with the right other thing, it gets much better much quickly. Like if you can do something with tokens or with artifacts or with you always have a mana sink in your command zone like Thrasios and Sisse, you kind of have to have it work with other stuff for it to really be good because the rate that you're getting the mana is just slow. It's just a little slow is
it's
all.
It's slow. Yes, every single non-creature spell that's cast gets you a food, but you only get one mana for every two food that you get.
Yeah.
So it still like has to, you know, be the right number of spells that you get before, like what is it? You need 10 non-creatures cast before you can get one Sisse activation off of it?
That's actually kind of a lot. And like against certain decks in the meta, that's just not going to happen. Like Timna Dargo can very easily play just like one non-creature every two turns and then just be okay with playing Mayhem Devils and shit like that. There's a lot of other decks that can get away with playing a lot of creatures and like not feed into it. But on the other hand, there are also decks like Ral and Rog'Sai that would feed it a ton. If that's a deck that's at your pod and you get the Cabbage Merchant out there, against those decks, I could see it being extra insane.
If you have something to do with the mana, is the only thing. Yeah. So I do think I like it limited to these mana sink commanders in general.
It also helps if you have Rhystic Study out as well. It works really good with Rhystic Study. You're making the mana to cast the spells as you're drawing them. So in that super mid-range, we're all trying to win on this stack at a just on a certain Born Upon the Wind or something like that. I could see it being extra helpful there too.
But those are all Thrasios decks.
But those are all Thrasios decks
anyway.
Because
you can't play it in Timnacrom, and that's the other deck like that that you would want to play it in.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think something to be afraid of is if you're playing against Marnius and you play the Cabbage Merchant, they're going to want to clone that thing so bad.
Dude, not only that, but they play the Chem Ball. That's their outlet too.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like every time that you make a food, then they're going to make a food once each turn, but your food drains them life and draws you a card with your Marnius.
Right.
Then.
It doesn't make you the mana though, unless you have the Cabbage Merchant, right?
No, but like, okay, so I played in a pot a little while ago now that had the Cabbage Merchant in the command zone, and we were playing against a Marnius player that had the Chem Ball out. The biggest problem is when the Cabbage Merchant player gets out Academy Manufactor, because then that way Chem Ball sees all of the tokens being made at once, and that's what it does. It makes all the tokens at once, not just one token. So if
it's every time an instance of a token is made, Chem Ball makes all of the tokens that instance made? Is that how it is?
I'm pretty sure if you entreat the angels, you would make the same amount of...
Can we read Chem Ball real quickly? Is that what it does? That's nuts. When I say that's nuts, that doesn't come up often in CDH, but still, that's nuts.
Yeah, whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your opponent's control, for each of them, create a tapped token that's a copy of it. Okay, so the only thing is that it's tapped, but it's fine. You'll still untap, and now you'll have blockers for their Entreat the Angels.
Exactly.
Or you get to attack first.
Yeah, you get to attack first into their Entreat the Angels.
Fuck yeah.
Cabbage Merchant also, I wanted to say something else about this card. I've seen it used as a commander, and I think it's almost something. There's like a 3-card combo, 4-card. Do you know what it is?
This game that I'm talking about here, we actually ended up losing to the Cabbage Merchant
player.
Oh,
really? Okay, yeah, okay.
I have a 100% lose rate for it.
Do you know what the combo is with Cabbage Merchant at the helm?
Yeah, so you need a couple of things. So Academy Manufacturer is one of them. Nuka-Cola Vending Machine.
Weird card.
Is like the main thing that you primarily need.
And refresh me. I know what this card does, of course, but can we refresh maybe some of our viewers who wouldn't know what this card does?
Who wouldn't know what it does, who are like washing a dish and don't want to like look over at the screen. Yeah.
Shout out dishwashers.
So Nuka-Cola Vending Machine, I've never seen this version of it before that doesn't have all the reminder text on it, so it's actually throwing me off.
How much mana is it?
So thank you. That's how you start.
I would start at the top.
So it's a 3-mana artifact that for 1 in tapping it, you can create a food token, and whenever you sacrifice a food, you create a tapped treasure. Now, I put this in the podcast document a million years ago, so I have to think exactly again how this works, but with like grinding and station in play as your official outlet, what this will let you do is make an infinite number of these artifact tokens and then mill out your opponents. Since every time you make an artifact, the grinding station will trigger, you can sacrifice one of them, and then whenever you sacrifice a food, which is what you're sacrificing to the grinding station, then Nuka-Cola makes you a tapped treasure, but the Academy Manufacturer makes you a food and a clue along with the tapped treasure that Nuka-Cola Vending Machine makes.
How do you untap the Nuka-Cola Vending Machine to do the process again?
You
or
don't
do you not
need
not to?
It just creates
one activation creates a chain?
It is a triggered ability for whenever you sacrifice a food, create a tapped clue.
Oh, it's whenever you can I read this card? Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a triggered ability, so you don't need to do
anything
else with it.
You don't have to create a new food, you just have to sacrifice a food.
Exactly. And grinding station's grinding station, so it untaps itself every time that you make the new
stuff.
So
you don't have to activate the food, you can sacrifice the food with another means, the grinding station.
Bingo.
I'm not an idiot.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying.
And guess what? The Cabbage Merchant is not one of the cards that you use to win. In this combo, the Cabbage Merchant is not one of these cards. These are just like all cards that are good with the Cabbage Merchant.
Is there a combo that works with the Cabbage Merchant?
Oh, I don't know. But but this is, because if you do this with the Cabbage Merchant in play, nothing happens. Like, you need like a grinding station.
Is the food that comes in is tapped, so you can't even tap it for mana?
But you're already milling them out with the grinding station, though.
Sure, but if they have protection from the One Ring or whatever.
You could do this on their upkeep, because none of this involves casting spells. As long as all of these things are in play, you can still mill them out on their upkeep. They go to their draw and lose
so
the
you
game.
Don't need to draw your deck or make infinite mana at all.
He's unnecessary.
Maybe there's something we're missing. Or maybe there's not.
Sounds like he's better in the 99 in general.
I think so.
And even then, I'm still like
we're questioning
on him.
I have a question mark on him.
Yeah, a little bit of a question mark. There it is. It's right there. The next card I want to talk about is Aang at the Crossroads.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. What have you gotten to say?
No, what do you think?
No, I feel like when we first evaluated this card, we evaluated it as a fairish food chain Blink Value Commander. And I think the newer version, I don't know, newer, it came out basically around the same time, that's like all clones and you just try to get a roaming throne or something that allows you to have legendary clones. I think sometimes they play one of the Sakashimas maybe or something, and you can effectively like chain through most of your deck. I think that version of this deck is really sweet.
You said one of the Sakashimas. It's on two different Sakashimas.
Does the deck play both of them?
Sakashima of a Thousand Faces and the Imposter. Yeah. It's every single clone.
Every single
deck.
Clone. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a deck that won a tournament, and that's really why I wanted to talk about this. Because there's actually...
Any deck can win a tournament.
Any deck can win a tournament. Yeah, no, you're right. But the reason why I kind of wrote this off was because I thought that you needed Roaming Throne in play for this to be good. So that way, what this ends up doing is each Aang lets you get a clone to get another Aang trigger, and then like a value creature then too, to let you like Internal Witness something or yada, 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 right? There's way more Roaming Thrones than I thought that there were.
Panharmonicon works here?
Panharmonicon works here. Starfield Vocalist is a 2-mana Roaming Throne.
Does the deck basically that won the tournament, it played all of these cards?
It plays all these cards, okay. Yeah. And there's a new Katara, too. Katara the Fearless is a Bant creature that says, like, it says when it, the one I'm looking at right now has is the textless version.
Is this the one that says, like, allies trigger a second time or something?
Yeah, allies trigger an additional time, right? So there's, like, five Panharmonicons in the deck? Oh, the Elesh Norn, the 5-mana Elesh Norn also works. Yeah.
That also stops your opponents, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. But it's also, like, not just the clones that work. Like, Felidar Guardian works. Restoration Angel works.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a Tali in that way.
It kind of is,
but
yeah.
All it does is create another. It doesn't actually gain you advantage.
Well,
at some point, I guess, like, once you start getting two, then you hopefully start gaining, like, advantage.
You have two, that's when it works.
You want to hit, like, two clones, and then you want to hit a clone and something else. And then you want to hit two clones and then a clone and something else or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the concept is sweet. I don't know how confident that I would feel playing a deck like this, but it does kind of feel awesome that you get to set up your engine and then watch it go. I love decks like that.
I do like the comparison to Atali almost, because it's another one of these food chain decks that really want to win with food chain, but it's like impossible to find food chain.
Right, but this allows you to find food chain. What exactly does Aang do again?
Aang only finds creatures.
It only finds creatures.
Yeah,
okay,
so Aang, when he enters, you look at the top five of your library, you may put a creature with mana value 4 or less from among them onto the battlefield.
Okay, got it. Okay, so it doesn't actually help you find food chain, but theoretically it can help you find like an advantage that would help you find food chain. Or I think the version that has like all of the Aangs is just looking to make like billions and billions of Aangs.
Preston the Vanisher is that's just another one. Whenever a non-token creature enters a battlefield under your control, if it wasn't cast, create a token copy of it. That's an 0/1 white illusion.
Oh, perfect.
Just like the same thing.
How do you win the game? Do you know how this deck actually wins?
Yeah, White Plume Adventurer.
Is that what it is? You can flicker White Plume infinitely somehow?
White Plume Adventurer is the only creature that seems like it wins.
And then I guess you just like find a way to clone. What do you do when you run out of clones though? Like when you run out of your deck? Is that enough times to run through the dungeon and that many times? That can't be it. There's got to be something else.
I don't know that you can run out of your deck because you play Endurance and every clone of Aang is a clone that goes to the
graveyard. Because Legend Rule. Okay.
As you like find Endurance, you can put them all back into your deck.
Can I see? You're probably right. That's probably it.
Yeah, and...
And then you just, go through the dungeon infinite times because you keep on Endurancing.
But yeah, White Plume Adventurer is the only creature that does anything remotely close to looking like it will be able to present a win from somewhere. Because every other creature is a clone or a Rule of Law, weirdly enough.
Oh, because you're not actually casting spells. You're just like going through your actions.
But you are when you food chain loop.
Yeah, that is a little strange, I suppose. Maybe just food chain is not the main goal, or is just like a side plan.
How else do you win then?
White Plume Adventurer and just like Enduring and cloning through your whole deck or something
that you need in like food chain for, like that's how you win. That's how you win with the food chain loop.
Because
it's just you cast Aang.
You just can't cast Aang over
you
and over again.
You just cast Aang, yeah. You just need the one cast.
I thought this
deck is
kind of meant to just go through its deck manually over and over again, and then eventually, I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe I'm just overthinking what this deck does, but I'm thinking you have several of the Roaming Throne effects into play over time. You somehow get more into play.
And you get a bunch of them in, yeah.
And then you get
no,
like a
bunch
somehow? No,
you're right. Yeah, you just win off one cast of Aang.
Is that,
I don't know why
is
I
that
got
sort of
so hung up in my
I
head.
I mean, maybe
yeah.
We're giving the deck too much credit. Maybe can't just win off of one cast. That does sound very powerful.
No, but that makes sense. Like, if you have a Rule of Law in play, and then you get like a Roaming Throne in play. Then once you slam Aang,
this is
you
four
get
cards
two
each time, right? Five cards.
It's so, five cards.
So out of
yeah.
10 cards, you have to hope to hit another clone. And out of 10, I'm sure the math is that you have more than one out of 10 cards are in your deck are a clone or something. Look for five, look for five, one of them is a clone, and you get two more looks. One out of five, one out of five, one of them is a clone, do again. One out of five, one out of five. And then eventually you get like a Sakashima, and then you get to keep them. I don't know how you like make it exponential though, because it seems like it should just be like one out of five, one out of five, and then go again. And then how do you get the endurance? I have a lot of questions.
I don't think you need it to be exponential, because you find so many clones that you can start using the triggers on getting White Plume Adventurer or Eternal Witness or something else. And then when you find Restoration Angel and you blink Aang, now that's two more triggers, right? So like that gives you like extra chances so that way you can go, I don't need to find a clone this time.
Yeah.
I can find this. And all the cards that you don't use get put on the bottom of your library.
Okay, I'm seeing it. Okay,
so if
I'm
you don't use them, you're going to end up finding them again. You just have to keep like manually going through your deck a little bit more
too. That seems
too.
Sick. How fast do you think this deck can realistically do stuff? Like it plays a decent amount of counter magic.
Pretty quickly.
Is this
I mean,
a turn three deck? I feel like you want to resolve a 4-mana sorcery, probably pass the turn, untap, and then cast your Aang then, right? Like otherwise you have to make like 8-mana, which is doable. But...
Yeah, but like turn two, Roaming Throne, turn three, Aang seems fucking awesome.
That seems like their
and
goal,
then when,
right?
You could win the game pretty easily right there, I would think.
Yeah, that should be doable.
Yeah, and then just play like a couple stacks pieces to make sure that you can stay alive in the meantime. Yeah, like all things that you can get off Aang that you can like put into play to make it harder for people to interact with you, because that's the other thing. Like technically, it's not a guaranteed win condition when you cast Aang. So like if they go, oh, I'm not gonna, you know, crack my treasures now to besage you, and then all of a sudden you use one of your Aang triggers to put Collector Oof into play.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh shit, I can't use my treasures anymore.
And it puts into play. There's no response.
You can't respond. Yeah, you have to respond to the trigger.
So it's
so
got
then
the
they
Winota
go,
thing.
Oh, Grand Abolisher.
Yeah, it's got the Winota thing where you have to respond to the Aang trigger, otherwise you might not be able to respond after this.
Exactly.
But as the Aang pilot, you can say, this is not a definite win. I could completely whiff here. This is nothing, which would convince your opponent to not interact there.
Yeah, and then Derevi, Emile, Gaia's Cradle.
Those cards are still in the deck.
They're still in the deck, and yeah, you can just like blink White Plume Adventurer that way.
There you go.
Too.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
Okay, yeah. I don't know why I got so hung up on Food Chain for a second there. No, I do. Maybe I do know why.
I get it.
But no, you're right. Yeah, it's you cast Aang and you just cascade through your deck and you just win the game.
Yeah, the Food Chain also probably just like makes it easy to explain your opponent. Like, it took us 10 minutes to figure this out. If you can get the Food Chain in play, it's easy to explain to your opponents, you are dead because I will cast Aang billions of times and go through my entire deck.
Man,
right?
I wish there was a creature that could just like put the Food Chain into play, but there is not.
There's no way to actually get it with any of the creatures, right?
Nah, there's not. That's fine. You don't need it.
You could Phyrexian Metamorph an opponent's Wishclaw Talisman.
Oh, that's awesome. There we go. That's
your one way.
I love this. Yeah. So this deck could win a CEDH tournament.
Next.
And it did.
It did.
And it did, yeah, which is awesome. So that's a cool thing to see. So now everyone keep an eye out for it so it never does again.
Yeah.
The next card that I wanted to talk about is Tataru Taru.
I feel like you've turned around on this card a little bit recently.
I've done a complete 360 on this card.
180?
No, maybe it turned out to be a 270 in reality. Because I did a 180 and then I was like, you know what? I still think it's not great and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
But like, now that I've played it in both Timna Malkum and Blue Farm, I understand why people have liked it so much.
Yeah, it can. It's quiet. You know what I mean? Like, it's quiet in a way that it does not look threatening. And then all of a sudden, you're untapping with three treasures and then you pass a turn and then all of a sudden, you're untapping with five more treasures. And what's, you know what I mean?
It's like, oh, okay, yeah. It adds up quite a bit. Yeah,
yeah,
so like your 2-mana creature that replaced itself in your hand made you 7 mana over the course of like 3 turns.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
That's better than Bloom Tender a lot of the time.
And I feel like the card draw that you give to someone, it's really like not that bad. You can normally find a player that's the furthest behind and you give them the card. There are ways to do it where it doesn't bite you in the ass. And in fact, getting the card draw yourself can be actually kind of nice, especially if with top deck tutors, whatever. That draw is really not so bad.
I mean. Weirdly, like post ad nauseum. Or like if I get to Born Upon a Wind after a Necropotence, like it is kind of nice. As like
it's
we've talked about Brainstorm as like being a way to get the card that you Vampiric Tutor. This is a stupid way to get that too.
Right, it can still do that. You know?
Oh, you drew into a Force of Will.
Yeah.
Oh, good thing my Necro already resolved.
And being a 0-3 is super nice against Bowmaster. It can block Ragavan. It can block Timna. It sucks that it doesn't have any power itself, so you can't use it with Timna. But I think overall that's good. Timna doesn't need more help.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That has been a little bit sad for me where I'm like, oh, I draw one less card. It drew a card on its own already. So it did kind of get me that value. And as long as it is continually making treasures, it is good. There have been games where even in Blue Farm, I have seen it. And I know that it's not going to be good in this pod because like I'm playing against Animar and that's not going to be great.
Yeah.
Like it needs certain board states in order to be good. But when it makes you seven treasures over two or three turns, and like you said, very silently, its actions speak louder than it reads.
Yeah. It is very similar to the Cabbage Merchant. It does a very similar thing of just making you mana over time. I think the Cabbage Merchant reads a little bit loud because you're making a lot of tokens, but it doesn't actually net you mana as much as the tokens it's making you. So you're creating an action. Everyone pays attention to you, but you can't do anything yet. But they've noticed in your head, you got something. You got something, you got something, but you can't use it yet. So I think it's a little bit loud, whereas Tataro Taro is very quiet, and it's also only two mana. It's a lower investment. It's easier to get on turn one.
You end up going like, okay, it's fine that the treasures are tapped because like I'd rather be able to get this out on turn one way more consistently than like have to wait until my land untaps from my turn one Soul Ring to get this down comfortably or something.
Yeah. So that's a huge difference. So yeah, I've also been liking Tataro Taro a lot. I think it's great. I think I like it weirdly more than Cabbage Merchant somehow.
I don't know. I think I do too. Like that's going to go in a deck for me right now before I would put a Cabbage Merchant in it, I think.
I'm considering it in every white deck, I think, at this point. It might not be right in every white deck, but I'm certainly considering every white deck. I think Cabbage Merchant, I am not. And I know at the beginning I had always said like Tataro Taro, really it's good because it's a legend, but I think recently I've come around that it's just good.
It's just good.
It's just good.
It's just solid, I should say. Yeah. I don't want to say because it's like it's no Lotho. It is no Lotho.
It's
like
not,
the gap between Lotho and Tataro Taro is still immensely high.
Huge.
And like the second that we get something better than Tataro Taro, I will say goodbye to it.
Yes.
I just really just like wanted to acknowledge that like I don't think it's absolute terrible garbage anymore.
I'm fair with that.
Yeah.
Not
absolute terrible garbage, but when you bank a lot of treasures, your Mnemonic Betrayal turn is extra protected and now you don't run out of mana then. It feels way nice to have over the course of the long game.
Yeah, definitely.
But like if you're playing against the Tali, fucking put it back. Fucking put it back. Yeah. Let's talk about a card that is in the Lorwyn set that we did not mention in the set review.
Yeah, sure. What
this
card is that?
Omni-Changeling.
What?
So this is 3 and 2 blue for a Convoke.
Something else, right?
Yeah,
okay.
It has Convoke and Changeling on a clone.
It's 5 mana.
Which is why it's not in the Aang deck, because Aang can only get clones that cost 4 or less.
Yeah, we talked about the one Convoke spell that was a bounce spell. This is probably better, a Convoke spell that's a clone. I just straight up missed this card somehow.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Because it was, because the art's weird. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, it can't be our fault.
The art doesn't look like it's a magic card. Like, the art looks like it's a Yu-Gi-Oh character with a magic card art background.
Oh, interesting take. Okay.
Remember how like Penguin Soldier doesn't have like anything in the background of the art? It's just a Penguin Soldier.
Yeah.
It's like you took the art from a Yu-Gi-Oh creature and you just superimposed it into a magic card.
Yeah, this card I think actually could be cool in like Rogthrass or something. A deck that's looking to play a lot of clones and you're playing a lot of creatures anyway. I could see this.
I think that's where I saw it. Like you want to make sure that you have a lot of creatures.
Yeah.
Like so maybe Yoshi Thrass can play this too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yoshi Thrass definitely. Maybe Kinnan. Kinnan's looking for clones all the time. Kinnan doesn't play a ton of creatures, and oftentimes you'd rather just tap it for 2 mana so the Convoke doesn't actually do anything, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think the Changeling aspect on this is also insane, though, too. Like, with your Valley Floodcaller and Enduring Vitality situations, like, this is also something that will always untap because it's a bird, frog, otter, and the other thing that it needs to be.
That's actually huge. Yeah, that's actually a big part of it. That makes total sense. Kinnan maybe does want this, then. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it has a lot of really small synergy with stupid things.
It remains a Changeling when it clones something?
It's always a Changeling. It just says this card is every creature type. Oh, and then it says except it's a Changeling after the end of its clone text.
It keeps the Changeling part of it.
It will always be a Changeling.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, that's so good.
Oh, it has Changeling because its clone ability is a Mei. This could be a 5 mana 0/0 if you wanted it to be.
Why do that? Why give it the option but say no, not really?
Why do that?
Just make it a 1/1 naturally.
You may do it. That's so dumb.
This card I think is actually kind of cool. I thought for a second, Yuriko, it's a changeling, a ninja. Maybe. I mean, it's still 5 mana, so it's a big hit up of Yuriko. That could be something.
That's true. Your creatures are tapped for other reasons,
right.
Not for convoke
reasons,
though.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't really know. But yeah, big time in Rogthrass as another thing that is a changeling, so that it's a bird, so that it can be untapped with Valley Floodcaller. Any deck that's that's looking to exploit that and also have a lot of clones.
The Yuriko thing is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's almost something.
I think that's almost something.
Yeah.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, interesting card, though. I would say this is another one of the cards that we've talked about today.
I think so, too. We should give this one a rating because we did not talk about it in the set review, and we should have. So it deserves a rating.
It deserves a rating. I would say this card is worth trying in Kinnan and Rogthras, but I'm not sure outside of that. Oh, Yoshithras also. That's three decks. 3.2. That's got to be my most common rating, 3.2.
3.2.
It's a 7.
It's very average. Yeah, right? My deck's a 7. I'm going to say 3.5 because I think your Yuriko tidbit pushed this up a little bit. I think Yuriko's like kind of solidly in tier 2 right now, so I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that they thought of and then said, I don't want to play this, and then just moved on.
Do you live for Sunday dinner and that slow-cooked all-day flavor of a pot roast that falls apart with a dull spoon? Thanks to Omaha Steaks, I'm never shy about the proteins when it comes to Sunday dinners at our house. Every steak is aged to perfection to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland. Get 50% off the world's best everyday protein. Go to omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their semi-annual sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to https://omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their semi-annual sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Cool. Do you want to talk about another card?
I would love to.
Do you think Gilded Drake is any better now than it used to be? And by used to be, I mean like how it's been in mid-range hell. Because when we started playing CEDH, Gilded Drake was awesome.
It was the best.
Right? Like people played Gitrog Monster and Kenrith and you would steal their big commander and they couldn't win the game.
I would say it dropped off a lot because I think oftentimes a lot of decks realize that Gilded Drake doesn't actually help you win the game. You don't really want to switch places with the stacks piece. You'd rather just bounce it and then win around it. Dranith Magistrate, you'd rather spend one mana on a bounce spell to hit it instead of two mana on Gilded Drake or
and
whatever.
Give your opponent another resource than in a 3-3 flyer.
But I would say that it's gotten better recently. I feel like I'm talking about Kinnan a lot today, but I feel like it's really good in Kinnan. The surprise activation off the top, finding a Gilded Drake, sometimes it can be really devastating. So I don't know. I've gone back and forth on this card. The past 2 years, I thought it was pretty bad. The past like 3 or 4 years before that, I thought it was really good. And then recently, I do think it's kind of medium. It can be really good. Against Sisay, it can be kind of backbreaking. Against Rog'Sai, it does nothing. So I don't know. And recently also, I've had this philosophy. If a card has an option to be bad, I don't really want to play it. I know that Rog'Sai does play some bad cards, and so does Sisay, but oftentimes the cards, they're what you want to see at some point. You know what I mean?
If the card has the chance to backfire on you or have a low floor at any point, why have it in your deck? Cards are so good now, every card in your deck can just be, oh, the floor is actually 2 inches from the ceiling.
Right. Now, that being said, I think a lot of the green-based guys' cradle strategies are very similar. So if your metagame is full of a lot of those green-based guys' cradle strategies, and you're also playing a green-based Gaia's Cradle strategy, I think having Gilded Drake is really good. Because
That's a lot of times
you want to play Kinnan, but you're playing against a Kinnan. And wouldn't it be great if you just took their Kinnan and now you have one and Kinnan's great in your deck or whatever the situation is. A lot of the things are like transferable. You want to have what they have. Enduring Vitality, you want an Enduring Vitality anyway. Let's take theirs and give them a Gilded Drake. It can be really good if you're in that super green meta, but it just doesn't do enough against like the Grixis piles. Takes a Timna, that could be nice. But besides that, I don't know.
I feel like why I've been more impressed with it is because I've seen it in my opponent's decks, and it's helpful to stop my other opponents from winning.
Okay.
Like Sisay, like against Sisay. Like when Tyler is like, oh, I guess I have to spit into Gilded Drake. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, Gilded Drake. Yeah, Gilded Drake. This card's so good now, right?
Yeah.
And then I untap and I try to win or something, right?
Right, yeah. To me, that means the card's bad, but okay.
So to me, I guess that means it's bad because I don't ever want to put it in my deck.
Yeah.
But I like seeing when other people play it.
Because it stops somebody else.
Yeah, and it means that, like, I'm not just gonna, like, lose the game right away.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I'm gonna give this card a 5.
I think that means that this card is not good.
Probably not good, yeah. I think it's been clutch sometimes.
Yeah.
I think
when it's good, it's memorable. Holy shit, is it memorable when it's good.
And the way that, like, Steel Enchantment is kind of, like, I feel like with the uptick in Steel Enchantment kind of stuff, and you go, well, what if there was a creature version of that? And you go, oh my god, there is. We've had it forever.
Oftentimes, I would rather just take a Rhystic Study than any of the creatures on board is like the real truth. And you know what I mean? Like that comes up more often. And I would rather Steel Enchant than Gilded Drake a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I, I do think that makes sense that it's more like meta dependent. And if you play against a lot of like semi mirror matches, then it's going to be good there. But I wouldn't put it in my deck as a way to be like, oh, I got a metagame against some commanders. Like, you know what's great against Magda is just taking their Magda. What do you want a
what
Magda
are you gonna
for?
Do with a Magda? But it's much better if you're playing Kinnan and you're playing against Rogthras and you take their Thrasios. That's really good.
That's really good.
Yeah,
then
so
yeah,
it definitely it's meta dependent for sure.
Yeah, I like that.
Should we talk about another card?
Calamity's Wake.
Calamity's Wake, what? Hold on.
Do you remember this card?
No, not at all.
What if I told you it was from Brothers War? Does this help you out at all?
Is it red?
No.
Calamity's Wake.
Calamity does imply that it would be red.
I would think so, yeah.
But it's actually a card about the aftermath of Urza's Ruinous Blast, I think.
Is it blue or a reanimation?
So that means it's white.
Oh, okay. I don't know why. White was not an option for me. All right, Calamity's Wake, a white card. Yeah, what is this card? Do I not know this at all, or am I a fool? I probably know this, and
will know this once I start to read the card, but why hasn't this card seen play? For one in a white, it's an instant that exiles all graveyards, and players can't cast non-creature spells this turn.
Oh.
And then exile Calamity's Wake.
Huh, yeah.
This card's been out for like a couple years now.
2 mana is a lot. But no non-creature spells is real good.
But so is Grand Abolisher, and we play Grand Abolisher.
You could also exile graveyards. That's also something.
Why don't we play this card? Also something.
Well, Grand Abolisher says that you can't cast creatures either. And so does Voice of Victory, right? What does Voice of Victory say?
Yeah, but Grand Abolisher is not interactive. Voice of Victory is not interactive.
This can stop your opponent and protect you?
This can stop your opponent and protect you the same way that Silence can. Instead of Silence being a Voice of Victory spell,
this is
a Ranger Captain of Eos spell.
Why isn't this played? My gut reaction is it's 2 mana. Like, you're right. My brain says, no, that effect is worth it, right? Like, because we've already played that on a body.
Oh, maybe it's because it's players can't cast non-creature spells.
Oh!
And that you have to have, like, a creature combo.
Oh, that's why.
But, like, Rocco's coming up more. I feel like this is
Rocco
a great card for, like, Rocco.
I can see Rocco playing this. Yeah, Rocco should definitely play this.
So if I spin into this with a Tali, I shouldn't cast this.
Oh, definitely not. Maybe Sisse, no, no. I don't think this one's good at all.
Wow, I deflated really quickly on this one.
Well, you live, you learn.
I know that when we did the Brothers War set review, that we even realized that it was players. Maybe we did.
I hope so.
Maybe I'm not giving us enough credit.
You have to go back and find it now.
Since then, I did not think that that's what that card did, so I'm glad I never put it in a deck.
Yeah, me too. That
yeah, really.
Like, you cast this, and then you go, okay, cast Underworld Breach. Oh, shit.
Shit. Wait a minute. Why does it keep returning to my hand? I can't.
What's going on? What the hell?
All right. How good has Hexene Squelcher been for you so far?
Oh, good. Very good, I feel like. I've won the game with it many times with it in play. There have been some times where my opponents go, oh, we actually just didn't have anything anyway. But there have been some times when they did have a grip of counterspells. I thought it's been great so far. Yeah,
I feel like it has been too. I did have a game where I went, ho, 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 I feel so smart. Hexene Squelcher, Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation, and my opponent goes, Mindbreak Trap. And I went, of course you do.
Of course.
His card haunts me to the end of the earth.
Yeah, there's still things. It has made me think about endurance a lot more because in Rog'Sai, having the Hexen Squelcher out is great, but at some point I want to use my graveyard and they're still allowed to cast spells. So there's things that are like touch the spirit realm and endurance and they could still have things that fuck up your Underworld Breach or your other lines and shit like that. It's not the be all end all, like you said, Mindbreak Trap or whatever, but it has felt really good. It's put me in a situation where like I feel more comfortable pushing on turn 3 because the Hexen Squelcher resolves. Oftentimes people tell on themselves when a Hexen Squelcher goes on the stack, everyone goes, do you have anything? No, no, no. Okay. Would if you could get rid of the thing. So I go, okay, fucking better protect this thing. That's not always going to be the case. People are going to be quiet sometimes when they're aware, but like you kind of have to talk when this card gets put in the stack. It's like Grand Abolisher. That's the thing that it does. It's like a check. It tells you what your opponents have and what they don't have. So even if it's not actually protecting you, I've had situations where they have to Mindbreak Trap the Hexen Squelcher and then great, you don't have Mindbreak Trap anymore. So I'm going to win now. Like it can still do things like that.
It's the same thing with like Defense Grid. Like they could always have countered the Defense Grid, but now that's still one counter that's out of their hand.
It's almost good when they counter the Defense Grid. They go, okay, great. I got a counter spell in your hand. Anyway,
that's probably the only one that you had. So now you're fishing for another one.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. So yeah, I think this card has been awesome. I've only played it in Rog'Sai. That's my only real experience with it. Oh, that's not true. I played it in that Shadow game that we played?
Dude, yeah. I think it might have been. I can't even spoil what happened with that yet because that was too cool. And we just need that game to come out.
That one was an awesome win. So I played it in Shadow also. But yeah, so in my experience, it has been good. There's been some times where a player plays it and then it doesn't do anything and they don't win. win the game. It is nothing, right? Like, it doesn't actually do anything unless you are already winning the game. It doesn't do anything if you have no cards in
your
hand.
It's not really scary until there's an intuition on the stack or something
like exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that it forces your opponents to have two things, and oftentimes one of the things has to be a bounce spell. Whereas normally, in their mind, if they're trying to stop Rog'Sai, they want two counter spells against you. That's kind of what they're going to be looking for. Ideally, that's what they want. They're not going to be thinking, I need to bounce something and also counter something. Whereas now, Hexing Squelcher makes them have to consider that. And then if they don't have the bounce spell and they have two counter spells in their hand, you go, great, and that's really fucking good.
I think that means that, like, I want to think about Snapback a little bit more, because, like, every bounce spell that we play right now is mana.
Yeah.
And Snapback's the only one that has, like, a Force of Will kind of pitch effect to it. So if you're already, like, playing Commandeer to make sure that you can steal someone's Rhystic Study at any point in the game, Snapback's now something that you're going to want to make sure you have, too.
Snapback, and also, weirdly, dude, so Snapback being, like, a free spell that you can target with your own and offer you can't refuse is also pretty
like,
neat.
Like, also, yeah, like, I don't need these blue cards after my... My Necropotence has gone or something. Off. Yeah, I need treasures.
And it's nice that it's no investment in mana at all. When Snap gets countered and you tapped your mana, ooh, that really sucks. And
big
like,
whiff.
That's
yeah.
rarely going to happen. How are you in a situation where they're countering the Snap? But sometimes it could. Whereas Snapback, if they counter that, you still have your untapped mana if you had untapped mana. So yeah, I've also been liking Snapback a lot recently. You just have to have that mass of cards first. You have to consistently have a bunch of extra blue cards in your hand.
But like you were saying, it does force the table to talk. And when the table talks, you get information. And you can use that information to figure out how you're going to win. right?
Or we're
going to
do something different now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I need to play around this one bounce spell because I know that a player has a bounce spell. So as long as I can get my Underworld Breach to resolve, then I'm okay. And like something now that I'm back on Blue Farm a lot more that I'm doing is like making sure that as I'm Underworld Breaching, there's always a Lion's Eye Diamond in play. Like I always have a Lion's Eye Diamond or a Lotus Petal that I can either cast again or I can like do something else, because having mana is the most important thing when your opponents are talking about what they want to do to stop you, and then you go Lion's Eye Diamond and they go, oh well, he's gonna have the mana to do whatever he wants after this,
right?
Anyway.
Yeah, it allows you to also hold up interaction for like the other stuff that you have in your graveyard as well, like making the mana first a lot of times with Lion's Eye Diamond. So if they do something, well, there's like a Born Upon in your wind, so in your graveyard, so you can go over top or whatever. There's, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're already instant speed, so you can just respond to what they do with another cast of whatever you need to.
That's the thing. Yeah, before you intuition again, if you can Lion's Eye Diamond and make more mana again, I would always rather do that. But I agree, I've really liked Hexing Squelcher. It has won me a couple of games like that too, where you just have it in play. I did still win that game that I got Mind Break Trapped.
You did still win that game.
Yeah, you just find another win condition instead. And that one's still uncounterable now. So it's still easier to put that together then. It just takes you a little bit more time.
That makes sense. I don't know what we rated Hexing Squelcher before, but
probably not high enough.
Probably not a five. And I think it probably is pretty close to a five.
It probably should be a five.
Although I haven't played it in Sissei. I don't think it goes in Sissei. I think it goes in a lot of red decks though.
Yeah, maybe Sissei and Magda, I think, still might be the only two that don't want it, but I just put it in a tally. So I'm very excited to actually get the chance to, you know, try it out, see if it does anything against like a Vexing Bobble for
me.
Or
that's
if it
like
just,
a big thing, yeah.
Yeah, or if it just ends up being something that's bad.
Oh, that's the part I didn't want to spoil, but I feel like I want to now, where I've done the thing where I had a Hexing Squelcher and a Vexing Bobble.
All right, say the thing.
I had the Hexing Squelcher and the Vexing Bobble in play at the same time, and it was awesome. I've done
and it
that.
It was your Vexing Bobble, or was it someone else? I don't even remember.
I've done both so far. The one that was on
that's
camera.
That's disgusting.
The one that was on camera was somebody else's Vexing Bobble, I think. And then I did one at Locals the other day where I had like the Vexing Bobble out first, and then I cast the Hexing Squelcher or something like that.
That's
and then,
cool, yeah.
I mean, do that Lion's Eye Diamond thing. So, yeah, it's been cool. I think it just like kind of fits perfectly with what the deck is already looking for. And the fact that now you have three pieces of onboard protect your stuff in Rog'Sai, I'm talking about specifically, but now that you have Vexing Bobble and Hexing Squelcher and Defense Grid, I feel like every time I play that deck, if my deck's doing the thing, I'm drawing a third of my deck. And since if there's three copies of an effect, I'm like bound to find one of them.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's just like better odds that you're going to hit some sort of protection after you draw your whole deck.
Or just making your Grand Abolisher uncounterable. And then the table just goes, oh, now we're in for
it. Yeah.
Okay.
It does allow you to feel extra safe as you're going through your line or something, when you can cast Hexing Squelcher and then cast an uncounterable Defense Grid and then your opponents can't do shit at all.
Which, like, really late in the game, you kind of need to be, like, too protected like
that. Exactly, yeah.
Well, I am out of cards.
Let me think if I have anything that I want to talk about.
Do you have any other cards?
I kind of wanted to talk about Necro Dominance. We just talked about all the Necro cards. I just wanted to bring it up recently because I used to hate Necro Dominance, and this card does still suck. suck, but it also draws you 30 cards, and it's really good.
It's still a necro
effect.
It's
still really good.
Like, anything that's going to draw you 30 cards for one life per card is still going
to
be
still
nutty.
Really good. There's times when it's not as good, and it's a little frustrating because you have to go to five, and yeah, there's moments where it's not the same as Necropotence. It's not nearly as good, but you still do get to draw 30 cards with it normally, and it is extremely powerful. That one's just winning me a lot of games. Not winning me a lot of games, but like I have been like casting that one a lot recently, and I feel like it's just good.
I feel that, yeah. Bad versions of good cards are still...
Can still be good.
They can still be
can
really
still
good.
Be good,
yeah.
Sometimes. I have a couple of other Rog'Sai cards that I almost want to play, but none that I really pulled the trigger on.
Well, what are you thinking about?
Boomerang Basics is one of them.
Don't play that card.
That one's bad. It's
don't
a trap,
play.
Right?
I think that's a trap,
I think the sorcery speed is no
put
good.
Put Snap back in your deck before you
I want the thing is that I want the card for is to be able to bounce in Necropotence or Dominance. Specifically Necrodominance.
Oh,
I
see. Okay.
I already have Beseech the Mirror and Chain of Vapor and technically Odawara as ways to get rid of Necrodominance.
Odawara can hit your own thing?
It can. Isn't
one
that weird?
One of them can't.
Besides, you can't.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that weird? I don't know.
I hate that. That throws me off every time.
It's weird, yeah. That whole cycle is like, I feel like it's too different.
Why does the red one make fucking two
Why is
one
the red
ones?
One ass?
Why is it so bad? It should be a ritual. It should be an uncounterable ritual.
Yeah, I agree.
For a dolly.
Discard for zero, make two red. That's what it should do.
Even if it was discard for...
A one. Yeah, one, make two red. That would be still good, right?
No, you know what it would be? It would be one in a red to make three red,
but it costs less
if you have
so
a legendary
ritual
creature out.
Or dark ritual? That would be so fucking good.
Uncounterably so.
Oh, wow. Is that your signature card right now that you're thinking?
Dude, just to get my Commander Flash card out on turn one even quicker.
That's good.
That seems great.
The other card that I was kind of thinking about recently is it Chromatic Lantern or Chromatic Star?
The Lantern's the one that makes players reveal the top card of their
library. No, not that one. The Chromatic Sphere or Chromatic Star is maybe.
Are you on Star now?
I'm on the one that whenever it goes to the graveyard, I draw a card, whether I activate
it
or not.
Star now.
Star. And then I think Sphere is the one that the drawing is part of the resolution of the ability.
Correct.
I want to be playing Sphere. Chromatic Star has been very good for me recently.
We like it.
I love it so much. It's been basically Arcane Signet because every time I see it, I'm spending two mana to make one mana of any color, but I also draw a card. Yes, you don't get to use it again. I don't want to use it again. I just need it right now. I'm playing Rog'Sai.
You want to play Metamorphose
so bad. Dude, I want to play Metamorphose so bad.
You'll play two Spheres instead.
It has felt really good. The deck has a great job of making a bunch of red mana, but it doesn't have a ton of red spells, and it has a ton of black spells. It does make a lot of black mana too, but it's nice to be able to switch back and forth from your red to your black and sometimes make the blue for Thassa's Oracle or Brain Freeze when you need to also.
Sometimes you're like, I have one black mana source, so I have to dedicate this land to being Dark Ritual. And then something comes up and you're like, fuck, now my Underground Sea has to be a counterspell instead and my line's wrong.
Right, yeah. So I have been thinking a lot about putting an extra version of that card in. It's also like an instant speed cantrip as long as you play it at sorcery speed, so I think that's pretty powerful. And the fact that it does turn the top deck tutors into whatever you want, and it makes your Jeskha's Will, the big bunch of Jeskha's Will mana you make, into like you can now do stuff. So I've liked it a lot when I see it, so it makes me want to play the Chromatic Sphere as well. That's the other one I really
think
about.
You have so much mana. I feel like the fact that they are a little bit mana intensive isn't really that bad, especially when you do compare them to Arcane Signet that you just like have to use right away, but you can also get out a little bit earlier and make your Mox Opal better too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. I think I liked it a little bit more than Boomerang Basics. I think I understand where you're going with that because Into the Flood Maw also does not target something of your own.
I cut it from Rog'Sai.
Yeah, no, Chain of Vapor. You're a Chain of Vapor,
Chain of Vapor
through
guy
and through,
through
and through and through
I made a couple swaps to Sisse recently. I can talk about the couple swaps that I made.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Took out 4 mana Teferi, the one that untaps an artifact, creature, and land.
Oh, yes, you did tell me about these. Okay.
Did I tell you on the podcast?
No, not on the podcast. I just thought, like, oh, these are new that I don't know about. Okay.
I think it is a powerful effect. I have found too many times it just doesn't quite do enough, get untaps for more mana, and sometimes it's really good, but I feel like I've been losing a lot with Sisse because I've been trying to be too defensive and stop people from winning, and I just want to instead make the deck faster and go faster and do my thing better.
That's a great point.
So I took out Teferi and I put it back in Saheeli. Saheeli works well with the Amonatu combo, but I'm not playing the Amonatu combo. I'm just using it as a red-blue legendary source to give my Bloom Tender haste, basically, make a new token copy of it. I found there's a lot of situations where I naturally already have Abzan or Bant colors, so finding blue-red allows you to, with one activation, and then either it by itself or with just just one extra mana, do another activation to find the Tyvar and the rest of your combo.
That's way faster that
so
way.
So I think it just gives you a little boost and just like another thing to turn your Bloom Tender into a Haste Guy to win out of nowhere. I really like Saheeli a lot. And then I also took out the One Ring. I felt like I was just slowly drawing cards and who cares? And I just felt like not impactful enough.
I felt that with a lot of decks in general, with the One Ring in general right now too. Like four mana to draw three by the time you get to your next turn is just like too slow if you're playing keys, if you're not playing like Derevi to like untap it in other ways.
Right. And weirdly,
if you are playing Derevi, though, like you're winning with it. It's not in play over the long term.
I had so many situations where like I want to keep the One Ring in because I'm a Derevi deck and I can just draw so many cards. But realistically, every time I play the Derevi, I'm just like, I would rather untap some mana and activate Sissé and just win the game instead.
Dude, you're going to draw a bunch of Sissé cards. That's not good. You need to draw like Interaction or like Win Conditions instead.
And maybe if I was on the more, whatever it is, the other version of Sissé, the soup version. What's
Clam
it called?
Chowder.
Clam Chowder. If I was on that version where I was just on like realistically five color Underworld Breach stuff, except I have like one Sissé line and I am playing the Derevi, it could make sense to play the One Ring there because you do draw the Rituals and the Underworld Breach and you have the way to win the game from a spot like that. I felt in Sissé that if I draw 10 cards, I'm not going to be able to cast a bunch of them. You
That's
know what
the
I mean?
Thing, yeah.
Like, I have weird 3-mana Sissé cards in my deck.
And it's still slow card advantage too. Like if you untap with it a second time and you draw 3 with it then, like it starts to feel good once you get to that point, but you have to survive until you get to that point. And if you're not drawing cards to help you survive or win the game until you get to that point, like at that point, why don't you just play Harmonize in your deck and see all three cards at the same time?
Yeah,
and like
exactly.
The protection barely matters. Sometimes it stops you from winning, but then you have to win on that next turn.
Right, yeah. And realistically, I've never had the One Ring protection actually not have me lose the game.
I did once only because I was playing against a Slicer deck.
Oh.
And that's the only reason. If I was playing against any other deck.
There are some situations,
The protection would not have been like, oh, that's enough time to make it work.
And realistically, you want to get the One Ring in play as quickly as possible. So you can draw the most cards with it. So if you get it in play on turn one or turn two, that protection is less likely to do anything.
Can't Cataxium probe me now? Boy.
Yeah, exactly. So I cut the One Ring, and then I also cut Force of Negation and Swords to Plowshares.
Oh, because you're not trying to protect.
I don't want to protect. I don't want to stop you from doing anything. Like, I do a little bit. I am still playing a decent amount of interaction stuff, but I didn't want the extra stuff. I wanted less. There was too many times where I was dying with Force of Negation in my hand or Force of Negating the wrong thing. I just want to instead progress my own board instead.
Yeah. The only thing about Swords that would make me raise an eyebrow a little bit is that would make me a little bit more nervous about Opposition Agent.
That's true. I am playing Dismember.
Oh, you are on that card, and I feel like I don't put that card in a lot of decks.
Yeah,
okay.
I like Dismember a lot in Sissé specifically because it is a colorless
for your Soul Ring.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm not doing much with the colorless pips anyway, and the white mana is like super precious in Sissé. I feel like being able to cast a Fabor Elder or a Sissé or whatever, a white spell that you want to when you want to is super nice, and having to waste that white mana on Swords to Plowshares can feel bad. Also, Dismember, weird thing, works really well against Sissé. Because if you dismember a Sissé in response to their activation, Sissé checks on last known information.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Dismember will make it a zero toughness creature before it dies, whereas other creature remover spells won't do that. So if you activate Sissé and then you dismember it, you basically stifle their Sissé search because they
That's
have to find
funny,
something that is less than zero
Instead
mana value.
Instead of saying, well, when Sissé was alive, she had 4 power. It goes, well, when Sissé was alive, she had -1 power.
Right,
so
exactly.
Fuck you.
So Dismember is particularly good there. So I took those four cards out and I put in Simeon Spirit Guide, Elvish Spirit Guide.
Fuck, they weren't in there?
They weren't in there already.
God damn.
Green Sun Zenith and...
We said the
and
other
the
one
Saheeli,
already.
And the Saheeli, Saheeli was the other one, yeah.
Green Sun Zenith gets what?
Green Sun Zenith gets Bloom Tender and Fabor Elder.
Oh, duh, yeah. Or Sovala, like any of your
or
win
Sovala,
conditions.
Or Sovala,
yeah.
Or Kinnan, or a lot of important other things. The main thing, I wanted more ways to get Bloom Tender in play. I feel like I'm not prioritizing getting Bloom Tender or Fabor into play early enough, so I want another way to help get that into play.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Make sure that you get them, because if you're trying to win quickly, you need them in play, and they need to be unsummoning sick so that you can win the game. And if you are too busy playing 4-mana Teferi and untapping a lot of things,
yeah,
that
doesn't
like,
actually win though.
Yeah, drawing your Force of Negation, that's great. Thanks for countering my food chain. Now we just lost to someone
to
else.
To the next player, yeah. I would rather put an extra mana like the Simeon and the Elvish Spirit Guide and win the turn prior
and
rather
go,
than trying to win
after.
Oh, shit,
I lost to Dylan. Well, I'll get to play another game right now instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I also like the aspect of Spirit Guides is people already don't know what the fuck Sissé is doing. So if they all count together, there's only 4 mana here. You can't activate it. you go, Elver Spirit Guide, activate and win. I can't wait for that to happen.
The Spirit Guides are so good.
They're gonna be so
good. The Spirit Guides are so good. Could you imagine if we get all of the, like, that cycle?
How good the black one would be? Holy shit.
And you just get to, like, Exodia your hand for a free Sisay activation?
That would be so funny.
Dude,
I can't wait. The next one, we have to be getting the rest of the cycle.
No, we're not.
You don't think we're getting it?
All the other ones are way more busted than this.
Yeah, the white one would be so good in vintage.
The white one would be crazy in vintage. Like, even outside of CED.
It'd be good everywhere.
Oh, yeah, like, CED, it's like, oh, here's a silence you didn't know about. Like, whatever. Yeah, but, like, Eternal formats, I think that would be nuts. You obviously can't do the blue one ever.
Obviously. Never. And the black one is also insane. Cast Dark Ritual so easily.
Free, yeah. Like, oh, no, yeah. I don't think we're getting the rest
of
that.
I hope we do. I love rituals and fast mana. I really hope we do.
You know what? The Fractured Universe set is coming out later this year. And what we were talking about with the Mono White Liliana.
Yeah.
That's happening. Like, that's a whole thing.
That's a real thing?
I heard something about the lore that's a real thing.
Okay.
So that wasn't just like a dumb thing that someone made up.
Liliana Spirit Guide makes black mana. That's what we're getting.
That one will make a white mana because it's in the Fractured Reality one.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
But it also has to be a creature type. Zombie Spirit Guide. Yeah. I don't even know what else.
That's a great way to end it.
I don't even know what else.
Thank you so much for watching. If you like Swords directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Abyss AA, E4 Cards and More, Red, Finks MTG, Wandering Around, Mike Gage, Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Okie Toad, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Johnny Denver Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fire, Spengler, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, SC Phillip, Olin Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Legs Banjo, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, The Works 472, Gear Bear Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Bomb, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Doot Loot, Kwaja A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thanks, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on the internet for more content.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
Bob Russell, Devin Morrow, Ruby Supreme, Willow 2998, Turtle 99, XO, Sarge MTG, Rick, Shardicus, Mick Masossi, Max McComber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Safarius, Ono Frog, Vietnam 69, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Yond Wild, Feng Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.